Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 14th of September. And we are so pleased to have Ken Rudin with us this hour, NPR political editor. He directs campaign coverage, and he has covered every congressional race in the nation since 1984. He worked for ABC News for a while, too, a long while, actually, from 83 to 91, deputy political director, and later as the off-air reporter at Capitol Hill covering the House. He's been doing blogs every day now. Those of you who have not found them, NPR.org, if you go there, you'll be able to find the Political Junkie blog on NPR. And Ken writes about all kinds of things, and you hear him on the radio all the time as well. We're happy to have him with us. He is. He wrote an interesting piece on the president's speech last week, and much has happened since the president's speech. A lot of people demonstrating in Washington over the weekend against the president's plan for health care reform. He asked the question, what actually happened as a result of that speech? What minds were changed? What votes shifted? Did the chances for passage change in any pronounced way? And that's what we'll ask him at the beginning of this hour. We're welcoming phone calls. We invite you to join us at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our great pleasure. So what happened as a result of that speech? Did votes shift, chances for passage, as you ask, change in any pronounced way?
Well, maybe. I mean, there were several audiences that President Obama was trying to reach in the American public, because we saw that polls have shown that Obama's job approval, especially on health care, has declined over the last couple of months. I'm not sure what of a reach out to Republicans, because I don't think very few Republicans, if any, are going to vote for the plan, certainly not in the Senate and maybe not in the House either. I think it was more for the Democrats, because the Democrats were fighting over whether to have the public option, whether to have this or that. You saw Max Baucus, who's the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, saying that forget about a public option, it won't pass the Senate. Then you had Tom Harkin, the senator from Iowa, who's going to replace Ted Kennedy as chairman of the committee dealing with health care, said, well, maybe it can pass after all. And Nancy Pelosi, of course, saying that the House bill must have a public option. So it's the Democrats that seem to be doing the most bickering, even though they have control of Congress.
Yeah. You also write about hearing a speech from President Clinton in September of 1993, a very well done speech, very persuasive. Clinton, as you say, in complete control. And you thought that you were pretty sure that the odds of something concrete happening with health care had improved dramatically. And then you say, and I was wrong.
Well, it was a great speech. And while President Clinton at the time, even though he's only been in office as long as President Obama has been now, both speeches were in September, the following September after the election, the Clinton numbers moved up a little bit, but there was a lot of resentment on Capitol Hill. I mean, of course, the insurance companies were against it, as they are today. For the most part, the Republicans are against it as they are today. But also, the Democrats didn't like the fact that Bill and Hillary, the shorthand term for the president and the first lady, basically dictated what would be in the bill. Now, and I think that's one of the reasons it failed, and I think that's also one of the reasons why President Obama has been so conscious of not repeating the Clinton failures of 93-94 that he stayed out of it. Now, the problem with that, of course, is a lot of Democrats said, if President Obama had used some of his political capital to say, here's what I want earlier in the process, we might not have seen the ugliness that we saw over the summer.
Yeah. Frank Rich's column, I'm sure you saw yesterday, said that support for his signature program has declined, not least because he gave others carte blanche to define it for him. The whole summer, they were defining it.
Right, that's a problem in any kind of political campaign. If you let your opponent define you before you could define yourself, you're always playing catch-up. And in this case, President Obama, it was playing catch-up. Now, even in polls, the overnight polls from President Obama's speech last Wednesday to the joint session of Congress showed that his numbers went up. But ultimately, when you ask the American people, do they want health care, this new health care overall, the votes are still not there, the numbers are still not there, and there's still a lot of more persuasion that needs to go on.
But they did a year ago say that. Everybody was saying that. People have been saying it for years and years. The costs are too high. Small businesses say that. Big businesses say that. the number of uninsured keeps going up. It seems to me as though there was a consensus. What the heck happened to it?
Well, there is a consensus. I agree with you. There was a consensus. Look, Bill Clinton was probably elected on the fact that the health care system needed revamping, and it certainly helped Barack Obama. Of course, there were much more issues, many more issues that defeated the Republicans in 2008. But having said that, I mean, basically, you know, they just got to let the American people know what it is. And for some reason, I guess perhaps because of the Internet, or the internets, as President Bush used to call it, and all the misinformation that's out there. You saw that with all the town hall meetings and the rancor and all that. People are just afraid. Now, there are millions of people who, manifest an overwhelming majority of people, are satisfied with their health coverage. They like what they have. They fear that they might lose it, or it might change, or it will cost more. But the point is, as you point out, that even the people who are happy with their health care, it's the costs are rising tremendously every year, and there are still millions of Americans who are not covered or who lose their coverage when they switch jobs, or they have a pre-existing condition. And that's, President Obama says that's unacceptable, and I believe the American people, I'm not speaking for the American people here, but I think the American people say that's unacceptable too.
So what was he doing waiting until the last minute to come in and try to rescue everything? Why didn't he try to define this better over the summer when these town hall meetings were going crazy?
Well, the problem, of course, is that Congress was Congress was gone from Washington in August. And two, as I said, I think he just really didn't want to repeat the Clinton thing about dictating what the terms were. He let first of all, Max Baucus, there were like four or five different committees in the House and Senate that were working on a bill. So, he said that, well, look, I'll wait for these committees to do their work, and then I'll tell you what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. But, of course, by waiting for that to happen, and some progressive Democrats feel that Max Baucus and the Senate Finance Committee dicking around too long, before something happened, it allowed the opponents, as you say, to define it before they could define it for themselves.
Yeah. So when is that bill coming out? Is it this week, Baucus's?
It's supposed to be this week or next. I think we say. I mean, the president said last week that said that Baucus said it would be. I thought he said the week after next. So I think it could be next week that we'll see it. It may be presented to the Senate Finance Committee later this week. And, it may be pared down a lot. There may be a lot of things not in it. But, it doesn't have to be done, I was about to say, overnight. Now, of course, this is more than overnight because we've been talking about health care since the Truman administration.
Right.
It doesn't have to have everything in it. You can revisit it. You can see what worked and what didn't work. But, of course, there's always a say, it's an election coming up. Well, there's always an election coming up. And I think to President Obama's credit, he decided to do it now and do a lot of things now because, one, he had the political capital, and, two, he had the votes in the Senate and the House. Now, I don't know if he still has the political capital because those numbers are going down, and it's up to the Democrats in the House and Senate whether they're courageous enough to fight for it because, again, there are a lot of Democrats who were elected in McCain districts who may be nervous about it. There are a lot of those blue dog Democrats who say this is, President Obama said it will not increase the deficit by one dime. Well, it could be a gazillion dollars, but not one dime. So they're nervous about what it's going to do to the debt, even though the president says not to worry, but they're worried.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any idea what's in the Baucus bill? Is it substantially different than what we heard last week?
No, I think it's the same thing. I mean, other than the public option, you have the portability, you have the pre-existing condition wiped out, and you have the cost, worked down. See, the thing is, unlike the bills in the House, Baucus seemed to make a concerted effort to reach out to Republicans to try to work out this compromise with Republicans. But Republicans have made it clear that they're not too willing to work out a compromise, or they just don't like the way it's looking. But Baucus is, to the angst, I guess, of many progressive Democrats, he still insists that the only way to do it is to get Republican support. And I think President Obama feels the same way.
Yeah. What did you think of the size and the tone of the demonstrations they were anti-everything yesterday in Washington?
Well, it's I don't know what to make of it. It's encouraging if you're a Republican and you want to stop this thing, but but it's discouraging because some of the things are just beyond the pale. There was one sign I read in the Times this morning. There was one sign that said the sign read "Bury Obamacare with Kennedy." Now, that, I mean, that's beyond the pale.
Right.
But a lot of the dialogue has been beyond the pale with the swastikas and the Nazi allusions and the death panels and for all you know, there's a lot of truth squatting out there, and yet some people just believe what they want to believe and. And there are some people who stand by and let this happen.
Right. Why is it happening to this extent? Because some of the comments, and they're on all over the news, oh, the Muslims are moving in. Pardon? Where are you living?
I don't know what it is. You know, there are a lot of people, and I've talked to a lot of people, who say that ultimately it's about race, and I hate... And my gut tells me it's not that, but too many people, more and more people are thinking that. I mean, when Joe Wilson stands up and says, you know, yells out, "You lie," I mean, people say, well, they wouldn't do that if they were a white president. Well, to me, that's a lot of garbage. They booed and hissed George Bush many times on the floor of the House when he tried to revamp Social Security, things like that. But it's just, there's just an ugliness out there, and I don't know if it's, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's race. I don't know if it's just sore feelings about the 2008 elections. But the dialogue is just not, I think one way of putting it, it's not civil.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about race. Dowd had an edgy column yesterday in which he said what he probably meant to say, Joe Wilson, was, "You lie, boy."
Well, see, that's, to me, that's just, you know, that's also beyond the pale. You know, look, Joe Wilson, I mean, there are people who point out, rightfully so, that Joe Wilson did support the Confederate flag and the South Carolina, you know, the South Carolina flag. He did work for Strom Thurmond and all that stuff. But look, I think there is a legitimate opposition to a lot of the uncertainty about the Obama plan. For all his great rhetoric, and I thought Obama's speech Wednesday was excellent, there were still no specifics. We still don't know how we're going to pay for it. We still don't know how we're going to add all these millions of uninsured to the rolls. So somebody is not telling us the whole story. And I think when Joe Wilson yelled, "You lie," it followed immediately when President Obama said all the lies that we've been hearing about, you know, what the opposition feels about the plan. So I mean, it may have just been blurted out, but the thing is race. I think that's an easy way to describe it. I think it's more than that.
Mm-hmm. He, in his interview last night on 60 Minutes, the president talked about, and you know, I'm bothered by this too. I think a lot of people are. The loudest, shrillest voices getting the most attention. And, you know, I usually don't blame the press for highlighting these people, but it seems to me as though we're in the midst of this, that we need to know details on this. We should be in the midst of a very serious discussion about this issue and many others. And instead, as the president said, civility is not interesting. The loud, shrill voices are the ones that are interesting, and we keep seeing them over and over again, and it makes you think that everybody in the country is kind of wacky.
Well, there are a lot of wacky people out there, and you're right. You know, they do have the megaphone right now because I think in the absence of, well, there are a lot of ways to describe it. Maybe, perhaps, in the absence of presidential leadership, in the absence of specifics on what's going to be in the bill, then you have the naysayers hogging the microphones because we don't know what the alternative is. And I think, you know, the Obama speech last Wednesday certainly was a step in the right direction if you want to get some understanding of what's going to be in the bill, but it still lacked a lot of the specifics that even the critics need. Look, if I'm going to criticize a bill and you're going to tell me I'm wrong, well, tell me specifically how I'm wrong. And I think what a lot of the pro Obama people feel is necessary is to get those specifics out and what the bill is. But of course, you know, as we said earlier, there's like four or five bills out there, so there's no one bill that will define what health care changes will exist. And I think until that happens, the opponents will still have the day.
Yeah. Let's talk about Senator Kennedy's seat for just a moment and who's expressed interest in this and why the son, Ted Kennedy Jr., who's a pretty impressive guy, at least on television, he's a guy who seems to have a heart. Is he interested in this at all?
No. I mean, all the attention, of course, was on the other Kennedys, and that would be Vicky Reggie Kennedy, his widow, and Joe Kennedy II, who is Bobby Kennedy's son, who used to serve in Congress until he quit in '98. There was a lot of attention on them. I think to their credit, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why they didn't want to run, but you don't, you know, people don't like the idea of being a seat being handed down. Now, of course, a Kennedy is a Kennedy, and we seem to have this soft spot in our heart for the Kennedy legacy. But you know, there was also a lot of things that people didn't like about Ted Kennedy. You don't like to bring this up, you know, following his death, but there were a lot of things that, you know, conservatives, I mean, Kennedy was the poster boy for everything that was wrong about big government, according to conservatives. So anyway, Teddy Kennedy, I thought, you know, gave a great speech, a great eulogy at Ted Kennedy's, you know, his father's funeral. He has never shown any interest in politics, political life, unlike many other Kennedys. We saw Caroline trying to be appointed to the Senate from New York this year. And you do have a lot of good candidates out there in the Senate race that's coming up pretty soon.
Ken Rudin is our guest, and we're going to welcome phone calls for him momentarily. The number is 800-486-8655. Ken, of course, NPR political editor, writes the Political Junkie blog, well worth your read on NPR.org. And you hear him on Talk of the Nation, and you hear him on the news and on NPR, and we're happy to have him with us. To you in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A reminder to you, this Wednesday is our major healthcare forum. We've been doing healthcare shows for weeks now on Tuesdays. On Wednesday from 9 until 11, our show will be at a remote broadcast. The Frederick Hospital Cancer Institute will have a live audience. We'll have 8 guests. Should be a really good forum. We have a Republican and Democratic member of the Wisconsin legislature, state senators. We're going to be speaking with people from the pharmaceutical industry, from the insurance industry, CEOs of major hospitals in the state of Wisconsin, from community health centers as well. So it should be an excellent forum. It's pretty packed. You can take the risk of showing up, but you may not be able to sit down because we asked for reservations. So it's best at this point to listen on the radio. It will be a good one. All right, let's go to phone calls for Ken Rudin. David from Eau Claire is our first caller. Ken, hi, David.
Hi, good morning. Yes, I wanted to address the issue of race as far as the politics of the healthcare debate. And it always strikes me as a little frustrating just that we generally don't want to talk about that issue as it does inform just the kind of controversy. And I say that partially because, I mean, we have people decorating themselves with swastikas, and we have people that are calling Barack Obama a Muslim and using that to build up dissent. And that's at a point where we're in two land wars against predominantly Muslim nations. So, I mean, there's so much obvious connection of some of the politics of this with differences in race that it always surprises me that the mainstream media doesn't want to talk about it. And I'm African-American. I live in Eau Claire, and we went to Toma, Wisconsin for a healthcare forum. And I was actually confronted by someone that was asking me where I'm from and challenging my right to be there, just picking me out of the crowd because I'm African-American. And I feel like the president, for good reasons, good political reasons, I think he hesitates also to associate some of this with racial differences. But we need the dialogue. I'll just put it that way.
Ken.
Well, I mean, David makes a lot of good points. First of all, there's no question our racial problem, and I don't put that in quotes because we do have a racial problem, didn't disappear in November 2008 because we elected Barack Obama president. The fact that he was heckled, black people are heckled everywhere, and it's not a new phenomenon. But I disagree. I don't think the mainstream media hesitates about talking about race. They talk about it all the time. We talk about it all the time. We try to weigh whether it's real or not. But at the same time, I mean, look, we're not at war against Iraq and Afghanistan because they're Muslim nations. It's because of, I mean, well, for many reasons, but I mean, one, it was a response to 9/11, and two, it may have been an illogical response to 9/11, but it's not because of their background. But also, I think, look, they were, during the 93-94 protests against Bill Clinton, I mean, he was said, you know, they were saying terrible things about him, awful things about him, and it's not because he was white. I mean, it was not because of race. It was just because they just, you know, the illogical arguments out there took over. When Code Pink and Cindy Sheehan would picket and protest and have their demonstrations against the Republicans, against Bush, it was because it was the philosophy. Do I think race plays a part of it? I do. Do I think it's a predominant thing? I certainly hope not, but I don't think it's just race. But again, you know, as David says, when you start talking about Muslims and birth certificates,
right.
I mean, it just gets out of control.
Yeah, it sure does. You mentioned Afghanistan. Let's spend a few moments on that before we go back to phone calls. There seem to be growing discontent among Democrats and among people in this country who are saying, you know, we need a timeline here. What are we doing? It's a lot of money. Do you sense a real growing discontent with this war, Ken?
I do, and I think a lot of it is Obama's fault, and I'll tell you why. Because the, first of all, the Democrats always have this bugaboo about being less than patriotic about military action, or less than defense-oriented, you know, I mean, which is ridiculous, but a lot of times Republicans paint them as less than patriotic. So they need to show their national security and defense bona fides. So during the campaign, Barack Obama would say over and over again, Iraq is the bad war. We got to get out. We should be focusing on the good war, the defensible war, and that is in Afghanistan. We'll send more troops to Afghanistan. And the Democrats, for the most part, didn't complain about that position during the campaign. But as we are seemingly winding down from Iraq, and seemingly Afghanistan is getting much worse, again, we're back to the same old thing. Do we want to occupy this nation that we saw with the Soviets and we saw with, you know, it just doesn't work. They don't want to be occupied. It's not because we're Americans or we're Russians. It's just their country. And so, for, you know, I mean, for all the reasons why, you know, we threw over the Taliban, for all the reasons that it's a response to 9/11, the point is that we're not winning the war, and 20,000, 30,000, 50,000 more troops are probably not going to ultimately change anything as far as, you know, the anger and the effectiveness of the Taliban in the countryside. So more and more Democrats, we saw Carl Levin, the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, saying, well, look, this is not a blank check. We can't allow this to keep going on. And Democrats fear, and it could very well be founded fear, that a Barack Obama has found his own Vietnam.
Yeah. So what does he do to keep that from happening?
Well, good question, because you know, the generals there are calling for more troops. And whereas, you know, more and more of the Democrats in Congress saying, no, this is not going to work. But remember, Barack Obama spent the 2008 campaign saying that we have to send more troops to Afghanistan. This is the war worth fighting. He's going to have to somehow explain to the American people why this is no longer the case, if he agrees this is no longer the case.
Yeah. Let's go to Paul from La Crosse. Hey, Paul.
Yeah, back to health care. It's tough to have a debate when the other side sticks their fingers in the ears and goes, na, 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 na.
Oh, yeah, no, there's no question. That's exactly what's happening. I mean, some of the things, if you watch the Arlen Specter town hall meeting, the Claire McCaskill, the others, the Ben Cardin of Maryland, I mean, some of the things they're talking about is just, I don't know what other word is than lunacy. Look, there are legitimate questions about the Obama, well, not even the Obama health plan, because he doesn't have a health plan, but the Democratic or the plans that are out there in Congress. There are legitimate questions. How do you pay for it? Who gets covered? Can, you know, are the taxes going to go up? But to talk about it's going to help, you know, put a pillow over my grandmother's head. I mean, this is just not true, and yet people keep saying it over and over again, and it's just. And as you said, Kathleen, as you said earlier, these are the voices we keep hearing.
Yeah. Well, tell me what exactly needs to happen politically to get some health reform. What's this deal about reconciliation? How many votes do you need? Tell me that story.
Well, the reconciliation thing is that some of the Democrats are saying, look, you know, we're tired of beating our heads against the wall because, you know, for most of the time, the Senate, you need 60 votes to stop a filibuster. And so the Democrats did have 60 votes, including the two independents, plus Ted Kennedy. Now they have 59 with the absence of Kennedy. The way it looks now, there may not be a new senator in Massachusetts until January 19th, which is a special election. So some Democrats, Charles Schumer of New York, among others, said, well, look, let's just have a straight up or down majority vote, calling it reconciliation. And, of course, that would bring an all-out war in the Senate, and I don't think Obama really wants that. But there's some who say, look, if the Republicans are not going to come on board, or if they're not going to even meet us halfway, then screw them. We don't need them. But I that's not the way the president wants to respond to it.
Do they have 50 votes?
Do they have 50?
Yeah.
I think they have close to 60.
I think
almost every Democrat, I mean, Ben Nelson of Nebraska is one of the few Democrats who are questioning, who may be questionable. And you may get, and if the public option is out of it, you may get Olympia Snow from Maine and perhaps even George Voinovich of Ohio. So you're pretty close to 60. You certainly have 50, and you're pretty close to 60. But the way the rules of the Senate, you know, in the House, majority wins, even if you have a vote of one. But in the Senate, because of the fear of the filibuster, you have to get 60 votes for most contentious issues.
So why didn't he just go ahead and do it then? I mean, if this is a signature issue, if he says that he's going to be the last president, by golly, who's going to deal with this issue, though he's not been the first, why not just do it? Because it will define his presidency.
Well, you know, it could come to that. But, of course, you know, as being a community organizer, being a compromiser, being so careful, I mean, when you think of Barack Obama as a candidate, he was a pretty cautious, careful candidate. There were other candidates who was far more, you know, willing to throw bombs, but not Obama. Obama was very, almost too respectful because he was just, for whatever reasons, he was just, you know, just very cautious. But, again, ultimately, if we're stuck at 59, we meaning the majority of the Senate, you know, the Democratic majority in the Senate, if they're stuck at 59 votes, they could decide to change the rules. But I still think it will not come to that. Mm. I still think they'll get 60.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul, for your call. Let's go to Joan from Williams Bay. Hi, Joan.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Joan.
Well, I would like to add an aspect that maybe could be considered in response to that representative who said you lie during his Obama's speech, and that is that President Obama has established a more informal venue with people, more comfortable and more dialectic, and it kind of encourages a response here and there, to whereas before, if he kept himself at more of a distance, we wouldn't be tempted to do that. And he could have addressed that and said, you know, I'd like to take a moment out and respond or do it later. And I think the media's got to be real careful not to jump in and play the race card right away. I mean, it's got to be more thoughtful. And, you know, a mountain is being made out of a molehill here. And it's Obama who's invited this and established this venue of I'm here for you, folks. You know, a little folksy kind of.
But he was giving a major, serious address to Congress. It was a rather formal setting.
Well, it was him. It was formal, and he was obviously out of line. But it was in keeping with this attitude that we can talk to the president whenever we want to. You know. And
all right, Ken.
No, I mean I agree that we do have. We too quickly jump on the race card and say, oh, that's what it must be race. And I agree with Joan, it's far more complicated than that. But I don't think I don't think Obama brought this on himself. I mean, what we saw this summer at the town hall meetings, the yelling, the rancor, the outbursts, and, you know, Joe Wilson was part of that. Now, you know, have Democrats done that in the past? Yeah, they booed and hissed George W. Bush, you know, in joint sessions of Congress, too. But I think the focus is that this one person made it personal. To blame Obama for this, I think, is a little bit too far. But it seems to be part of the way we treat our, you know, elected officials now. Is anything goes.
Thanks, Joan, for the call. John is next from Eagle River. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you guys? Actually, 2 points. I think, Ken, the Wilson comment really was in response to Obama saying that there was no coverage in this new bill for the illegal aliens.
Right.
And I think the Wilson's comment was, in fact, racist in terms of the racial slant against Mexican-Americans, who everyone thinks all the illegal aliens are Mexican-Americans. Of course, there's lots of Polacks and lots of others that are here illegally. The other point I wanted to make is Robert Reich wrote an article this weekend, And he was saying that, you know, the insurance companies are licking their chops because all these people are going to be required to have insurance. So it's going to be a windfall for the insurance companies. And if there isn't a way for the people to get to the public option, the insurance companies are going to be enriched by all this.
Well, John, I agree with you completely about why the insurance companies are so nervous about the public option. That's exactly why, because insurance companies, private insurance companies, will never be able to compete with the government, and they know that. And that's why I think some of them are almost willing to see Obama at least part of the way looking for a compromise, because the public option is the last thing they want. But again, about the, you know, about the immigrant, I really don't think Joe Wilson was it was a racial thing because of illegal immigrants, and it really followed right before Obama talked about that. Obama was talking about the lies that the opponent. So I mean, look, I can't put myself in Joe Wilson's shoes, and I wouldn't even attempt to do that. But I just felt that he was incensed by President Obama calling, you know, the opponents, the arguments against the bill lies, and so when he came up with the illegal immigrant argument, Joe Wilson said, "Well, you're lying." Do I think it was race? I don't, but it was ugly.
Yeah, it was ugly. Thanks, John, very much for the call. Let's go next to Albert from Madison. Hi, Albert.
Good morning.
Morning.
Why are we the saviors of the world, and wouldn't we save millions and or billions of dollars if we were just to bring the soldiers back here to America and worry about focusing on protection of our country here in America? That's my question.
Well, the answer is obviously yes, we would save it. It would not be millions, it would be billions. And that argument has been done against U.S. military interventions since Vietnam, maybe even since Korea. The feeling at the time, of course, was that, to fight in Afghanistan, to wage the war in Afghanistan, is to prevent future 9/11s. Now, there are some people I know who work in the Pentagon who basically say that, you know, look, there's no way another 9/11 could be launched from the Pentagon. All we need to do is have these drones out there protecting, watching for terrorist activities. But you'll never see a president of the United States saying, look, you know, I mean, look, the argument, Albert, that you just make is basically what Dennis Kucinich and maybe even Ron Paul tried to get through in 2008, and both were rejected overwhelmingly at the polls. But there are some people who feel, look, this is not working. All we see is that the insurgency is getting stronger, the radicals are getting stronger, and Americans and foreigners are dying, and it's not worth it. But try to change the policy, it's not going to happen.
Ken Rudin, our guest, our number is 800-486-8655. It's All Things Political for this Monday, the 14th of September. The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and, of course, the health care debate, which is raging right now. It was also about a year ago that some are saying we came close to a complete financial meltdown. We'll talk about stimulus with Ken in a moment and take more of your calls. Our lines are busy, but keep the number in mind, 800-486-8655. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we return to your phone calls at 800-486-8655. John from Madison is next. Hi, John.
Yes, I want to ask a simple question here. If the insurance company, if the corporate insurance companies in this country are against any kind of change, and they're funding most of the right wing opposition, why doesn't the average American citizen understand that it's going to be good for the average citizen? I mean, are Americans just that uninformed? And are they that?
Well, John, first of all, the insurance companies are supporting the Democrats, too. Chris Dodd, one of the most important senators involved in the health care debate, has been funded by the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies, for years. And, and Dodd, who's running for sixth term next year, is under a big challenge. He's running as a populist trying to stand up to these companies, but he's been taking their money for years. So it's not one party that's been really getting all this money. But at the same time, there are some. Look, there is a realization out there, I think, by some insurance companies that you know the groundswell may not have been there in 93, 94, but it is there now. People are angry. People see that the costs are going up, and there seems to be some interest by insurance companies in going along with some kind of change, even if it's only incremental. Remember, you know, last time you had the Harry and Louise ads that the insurance company proudly ran on, and you think there might have been a backlash against the insurance companies and the Republicans. If you remember, in 94, the Republicans swept everything in 94, so there was the backlash, if anything, was against the Democrats. This time, I think there is a real realization that something will change, and the insurance companies, for the most part, or for some part, realize they have to go along, even if they don't get everything they want.
Thanks, John. Suzanne from Rice Lake. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have to say that I disagree with your esteemed guest. I do think it's racially motivated. I think that in the past, when people protest against these things, they kind of stick to the issues and maybe they'll call somebody an idiot. But this seems to have gotten highly personal against Obama. That's my first comment. My second comment is, why isn't anybody out there organizing the people that are for this health plan or for President Obama? I received a robocall from the Tea Party yesterday, I believe, on my answering machine, saying they were organizing a rally in Shell Lake. I never see anything where anybody who is pro-Obama or pro-health reform organizing anything, and I'm wondering why that is.
Well, Suzanne makes two good points, and I mean, even though I don't think it's mostly racially motivated, I agree in a sense with both of them. First of all, it is personal. It is highly personal. It was highly personal when they were protesting Hillary Clinton when she was the Democratic front runner once upon a time. That sounds like a long time ago.
Yeah, it does.
And they were talking, and that could have been sexism. I mean, it probably was. But I mean, there seems to be, I don't know why, well, it just gets the sense out there that ignorance is taking over, and I think it's more of that than anything. But as far as your second point, I want to get to, is that early in the Obama presidency, the political group that basically got him nominated, got him off the ground, and got him elected, was winning. They seemed to be making phone calls. They seemed to be out there. They seemed to be organizing. They got the stimulus package passed. They got the bailouts passed. You know, there was a lot of opposition to bailouts, but these people made a lot of calls. And somehow, and I agree with Suzanne, it seemed like the phone calls stopped. They seemed to, like when the Congress took off for the summer, they took off, and they allowed the Tea Party people to take over. And I don't know why that is, because early in the Obama presidency, and, you know, we're only talking about a nine-month presidency so far, but early in the presidency, they were winning, and they were winning everything, and then they seemed to have been suddenly quiet, and I don't know the reason for that.
Hmm. I don't either. Just to note, because it's a fairly serious issue as well, it was listening to NPR on the way in today, and there have been a lot of reports about how close we came to a complete financial meltdown about a year ago. What's your assessment of that, Ken? Do you think that we did, and do you think the stimulus packages that this administration has put in place have made us turn the corner a little?
Well, you know, I'm not an economic expert, although I play one on radio. I honestly don't know the answer. It seems like that, and I read a lot of stuff over the weekend because it's the year anniversary, it was extremely serious that Bernanke and Henry Paulson, who was the Treasury Secretary at the time, realized this was major stuff to allow Lehman Brothers to collapse. Apparently, by doing so, they shocked they shocked Wall Street and everybody else, saying, look, this is serious. And perhaps if they tried to bail out Lehman Brothers to try to prop it up, people would have not realized how serious it was. So it almost looks like they sacrificed Lehman Brothers to make the point that this is really, really serious. Has the stimulus package changed things? You know, everything is cyclical. I mean, we don't know if Ronald Reagan, you know, in 1982, it was the worst recession, people said, since the Great Depression. And we don't know if Reagan's policies changed it or it's cyclical. So we don't know if the stimulus package changed things or it was going to change anyway. We do know that that unemployment has increased, that it's gotten worse, and that jobs are not being created. And Vice President Biden said at one point, he said, maybe we need another stimulus package, and that may be the case. Or it may be just working its way, you know, self through. But I do feel that had we ignored the severity of what happened last fall, it would probably have been so much more today.
Yeah. Let's go next to Scott from Wisconsin Dells. Hi.
Good morning, you two. Before I ask my question, with apologies to Charles Schulz, it occurred to me the other day that the Democrats are actually Charlie Brown, and the Republicans are Lucy, and bipartisanship is the football. And, you know, this time I won't pull it away, right? But my question is, when I listened to the speech the other night, I expected to hear some comment about triggers or some mention of that that had been rumored. Ken, do you know what the story is? Is there a possibility of a trigger mechanism in a health bill?
Well, I think the trigger is more alive than a lot of people think. I think you know, we don't know if the public option is dead, but does that mean the trigger is there or things like that? What I do know is that there was a lot of things I sat there on Wednesday night waiting to hear, and I didn't hear. I think it was a great thing that we need bipartisanship, that that I'll listen to the other side, that I really want a bill, that I'll do what I can. But I didn't. I mean, maybe people would have just turned off and dozed off by listening to specifics. But I suspect, you know, and again, I don't know everything that's in the new bills. I don't know everything that's going to come out of Senate finance. But I do know that if we don't hear specifics after Baucus releases his bill, then we're going to be doing the same old platitudes and, you know, the same old misinformation. We've got to know what's exactly what they're talking about, and then we can see if it flies or not. But until then, you know, the nonsense will continue.
And what do you think is the biggest gap here? How we're going to pay for this, or exactly what the insurance exchanges are, the public option? What leaves you wanting?
Well, the Republicans keep saying that it's medical malpractice, and I believe that's really not as big an issue as it is. I think it's people, the overwhelming majority of people, who have what they consider to be good health care, even though they're paying more than they've ever paid, and they're afraid they're going to be paying much more. They're going to be afraid they're going to be paying much more taxes. There's no way that with all the bailouts and the stimulus package and the changes of the economy and putting millions of people more on the health care plans, that somebody's going to not have to pay for it. I mean, there were two negatives there, but it's going to have to be paid for, and people are nervous about that. But again, the status quo seems to be unacceptable because, again, so many people, because of the pre-existing condition, because of changing jobs, they're losing their health care. And in this country, that should be unacceptable. And I think everybody should agree with that.
Thanks, Scott. Dave from Escanaba. Hi.
Hey, good morning, both of you. Just a comment and a question. Why haven't we heard more on the Acorn investigations? The question, or my comment, is early on in Bush's administration, if you had disagreed with Bush, you were called unpatriotic. And now, is that possible thing raising itself with the race issue, where if somebody vehemently disagrees with the Obama administration, they could be viewed as a racist when in turn they were just disagreeing? I'll take my comments off the air, and thank you both of you.
Thanks, Steve.
This comes down to my personal philosophy is exactly this. Look, you could say that you have a black president, and so if you stand up to him and you yell at him, it's race. But it wasn't race with Bush. And there so in other words, there are a lot of people who, because of deep philosophical reasons, disagreed with Clinton, disagreed with Bush, with both Bushes, disagreed with Reagan, disagreed with Obama. And I think it's more philosophical. I think some of the signs you see, some of the outbursts you hear, or, you know, with the Muslim stuff, is unfortunate. But, you know, I don't think the Code Pink people were emblematic of the opposition to Bush. But, I mean, and nobody focused on them as saying, well, you know, this is insanity. So I think that they've hit on something in that there's a lot of people willing to ascribe motivations that may not be there, and they could be there, but I think there's just a deep opposition to these things on philosophical reasons.
And what about the Acorn investigation?
Well, Acorn, apparently, I mean, I don't know if this is what Dave was talking about, but of course, you know, Acorn, and they acknowledge it, that they have had people go out doing census work, and of course a lot of it was just nonsense. They fake signatures. They had, you know, thousands, because they were getting paid by the signature to sign these people up to vote, and the Republicans made a big stink of it and said, look, you know, perhaps they made a bigger stink of it than it was worth. It may have been not big of a conflict, but Acorn really, you know, got hammered over this because they hired people who were just doing nonsense jobs and, you know, bogus jobs. And so now the announcement this weekend that they're no longer going to be involved in the census the business was certainly good news for conservatives.
Yeah. Bud is next from Wausau. Hi, Bud.
Good morning. I have been threatening to write a letter to the editor on all this noise about the Medicare and so on and on. I can tell you I'm 78 years old, and 25 years ago I was a district manager for an insurance company selling Medicare supplement plans and other miscellaneous policies that the company handled. And even with that experience and the knowledge that I have about insurance, I was unaware of how wonderful Medicare is for we retirees. I can tell you my wife just went through, 2 months ago, a triple bypass and for her heart. She was out of the hospital. The operation was Wednesday. She was walking on Tuesday. She was out of the hospital on Saturday, 4 days later, and she's advancing wonderfully, and it was all done at the Aspirus Hospital in Wausau, which was a wonderful place. But the point I want to make is that the hospital total charges came to something over $41,000 or $42,000. The doctor's bill was equal, and I think he earned every penny of it for his wonderful knowledge and how he handled it. But the total bill to us after Medicare paid and the negotiations with the hospital on their total costs, et cetera, the total cost to us was around $2,500. Now, I inquired what a Medicare supplement plan for my wife and I would cost us at this age and time. Annual premiums would run us roughly $4,000 per year. Now, truthfully, we don't anticipate these kind of expenses every year. We don't anticipate them more than maybe once in a lifetime. And the other miscellaneous things that we go in for, we get minor little residue charges to that we pay. And if the you can call it socialism if you want to, but I think this Medicare is the most wonderful thing that has happened to the American public. And now, like I say, I used to be a district manager for an insurance company, and I'll tell you how we used to sell 25 years ago hospital benefits to the public, and how these insurance companies used to do these things. We sold at the time when hospital room costs were $20 per day. We touted our policy as paying up to $6,000 on room costs, and we were told to sell it that way, and not to explain that the average hospital confinement is from 5 to 7 days. And in order to get these $6,000 of room benefits, you had to be in the hospital for up 300 days. Well, nobody's in the hospital for 300 days. You go to a rest home or you go to a nursing care facility. But that's the way we were taught to sell it, and the miscellaneous stuff was broken down. For the operating room, they would pay up to $300. Well, there were your big costs and your miscellaneous. You ran up probably $4,000 or $5,000 back in those days, which was a lot of money. And you were given back maybe $500 out of those monstrous costs. And that's the way we used to sell that stuff. It was trash, and I felt like a shill for the short time I worked for them.
Yeah, I'm glad that your wife is doing well and that you love Medicare, Bud. Ken.
Well, first of all, I agree. Thank goodness that Bud's wife is well.
Yeah.
But I, you know, not too long ago, I was reading over the debate in Congress during Medicare, and socialism was yelled out, you know, right, back then too, and I smiled because we're hearing those same words today.
Yeah, we sure are. Thanks very much for the call, Bud. Let's go next to Jesse from Peterson. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually just want to allude to what you were just saying earlier. back in the 60s, Ronald Reagan, when Medicare was being passed, he was calling it communism,
yep.
saying that our grandchildren will be telling our grandchildren about what it was like to be free back in the day. And even Social Security, they were saying that it would be the lash of a dictator being felt. And it's just history repeating itself over and over again. And I'm a young man. I spend time on the Internet, and I do forums. And if you talk to people in other countries, they are amazed of the lack of health care that we have. And they would fight tooth and nail to keep their national health care systems. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Jesse, for your call.
Yeah, no, I like that. I mean, I remember that, too. I not only do I remember it, I remember I was also reading that stuff, too. The language we heard in those fights over Medicare, Social Security, is very similar to what we're hearing today.
Yeah. So what are you looking at this week, Ken, other than, you know, total health care reform and wars and...
Well, there's a very important New York City mayoral primary tomorrow. And once upon a time, the Democrats used to control everything in New York City, and they haven't elected a Democrat in 16 years, and they're not going to elect a Democrat this year either, which is kind of amazing, shows what's going on in politics. But it's more the same. It's, you know, it's unfortunately, it is more the same. It's a lot of Obama trying to sell a plan. But again, the big change, turning point, I suspect, will be watching what comes out of Senate finance, and then the Congress will be close to voting on a bill.
Yeah. Thank you, Ken. Great pleasure to have you on the air. Thanks.
Great show. Thanks a lot
Thank
for
you.
Having me.
Ken Rudin, NPR political editor. He writes the Political Junkie blog on NPR.org, and he writes it every single day. This guy is really into politics. I love it. He has been directing campaign coverage for the network for a number of years now and does presidential work and the primaries, national conventions, debates, and general elections. He's been analyzing every congressional race in this country since 1984. Do go to the Political Junkie blog for those of you who love politics, and I know you do because you tune into this show every Monday. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, and thanks to Rob Schroeder for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. A reminder, we're live from Frederick Cancer Institute on Wednesday of this week, and tune in to our healthcare forums for a solid 2 hours. News coming up. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.